Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, it is a party cast, and we have Pernell, Chris, and Brooke. How is everybody doing?
What up?
Doing pretty good.
Yo. Yakin and yakin.
Also fine.
Ocean waves.
Yakity yakin.
Everyone's like super quiet now. I don't know if it's my audio setup or if it's just everyone's super quiet today.
I was pretty loud.
I don't know.
Blame your audio stuff, because I was pretty loud, and I feel like there was excitement and adventure coming out of both of their voices. See? There you go. So what was your audio stuff, I told you.
I just realized that Shinobi the Warlord is spelled with a question mark.
Yes.
In the Twitch chat. Pretty good.
Do you have to read it like that as well?
Shinobi the Warlord? The Warlord? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try and remember.
We'll get to that in a little bit. But before then, the reason I'm asking about my audio is I had a fun weekend this weekend. I actually have something to talk about for once. I went to Hanover, PA this weekend to visit our good friend Adam Chase and his wife Ashley. Our good friend Doc Havoc came with us. It was me, Ashley, and Ian all going down. And we saw our other friend and SML regular, Ryan Niemiller, perform stand-up live in Hanover.
That's nuts.
Huzzah. Yeah.
So we went down into town, and I went to a little antique outlet, and I found a new audio box because my mixer's been giving me issues. Picked it up, hooked it up, set everything up, and apparently I got the one mixer that doesn't record in mono. It only records in left channel and right channel, and I can't force it to mono to get it on both channels.
Boo.
Yeah.
I was about to lead in.
I have
found an audio mixer at an antique store now, what you just said kind of answered the rest of it.
Yeah, I have a brand new, well, not brand new, but I mean, I am still paying for it, so maybe it's still brand new. But yeah, I got one of those Volt 4 audio interfaces, has a big blue mono button on it.
Nice.
So that when things start sounding weird, and then I know that my cat has stepped on it, and then I can just push that blue button and get all my mono sound in both my ears and stuff.
Yeah, I think the only fix I would have is if I bought some kind of splitter to split my microphone into two, so I could plug one in the left, one in the right, and then get an actual stereo recording. But I'd rather just resell it.
Just get two microphones. Be like one of those cool guys.
You get two microphones and a turntable.
Yeah.
Where it's at.
Two microphones and a... Yeah, it's not as singable, is it? Two microphones and a turntable.
Well, we can
Where
try.
Where is it?
Yeah.
Fall into the abyss
two microphones
of my gaping butthole.
Oh, we just got raided. Word. Welcome in, Raiders. Everyone from Dopey's channel. Welcome in, everybody. This is the SML Podcast. We're chatting about my weekend. I went to see our friend Ryan Niemiller in concert, and he was funny as hell. If you get a chance to see him in your area, you should check him out. Check out cripplethreat.com. He's good peoples.
Check him out.
And he'll be on the show soon. So
do it.
Yeah.
But my memory is a little off. And like, has he come on like to do reviews? Has he come on as a guest? Has he come on for all of the above?
He's come on mostly on the Thursday shows. I don't know if he's ever done a Tuesday or not. I think just Thursday shows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Like, I was like, huh. Like, I feel like I should know who he is, but I've never met him.
Yeah, he's an actual professional stand-up comedian. So it's funny
to
have...
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's good to have someone funny on the show for once.
Whoa.
Hey, you kissed my ass. I'm hysterical when I want to be.
That is true.
Also, I'm not a good crew. Joke.
I'm not claiming anything.
What was my favorite joke from his show?
Yeah, can you recall it?
Oh, yeah. Man, he was... He went on a tangent about something, and it led to like talking about... This might be a trigger for some people, but he was talking about suicide and how he's unable to do it because he doesn't have wrists.
Mm.
He doesn't have wrists?
No, he's disabled in both hands.
Oh, wow.
Ah.
Yeah. So he has like two partial fingers on one and like three on the other, and he does great with life, and he's funny as hell, and he makes fun of it himself, and his jokes are hilarious. And
that means all the sadness and despondency the rest of us go through, it's all in the wrists.
Yeah.
The prophets were right, by which I mean the baseball players.
The sad bowlers. Part is there is a moral that I wanted to get to in this story. If you ever go see stand-up live, shut the fuck up. Seriously, let the comics talk. Don't interject. Don't tell a story yourself. Don't pipe up. If the comic is telling a story, shut up.
It sounds like they got lucky then, because a lot of comics, they'll derail their entire set just to rag on you if you interrupt their set too much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless they're doing crowd work.
Yeah, people see all these hecklers get owned online, and they think that's part of the show. And, you know, some comics, they just want to tell their stories and do their act. And they don't care what the drunk bitch in the first row has to say about whatever, like how frequently they visit the place and they're in the front row and they're always there for 10 years. Ugh.
It boils down to one of the things where it's like they may take it and turn it into something that ends up being a showstopper, but it's also not something that they want to do. That's them being actively angry and saying, this is me taking my anger out on you for ruining my set.
Yeah. Like he tried saving it and being nice to them in the beginning, but by the end of it, he was just kind of like, shut the fuck up, please. Or like, take her home. I wish the venue would have had them removed, but you know, if you're going to see stand up, let the comics do their job. That's what you paid for. So
a couple months ago, I had my first experience where somebody was so disruptive that they had to be removed from the venue while I was playing a show.
What happened?
Oh, he was just shouting and he was like, I guess having a good time, and he was like, you know, there's some dumb rich kid, so he was like offering to buy people drinks, but I don't think he actually was doing it. And yeah, he was just like hollering along with whatever else we were doing, and eventually he was like trying to like get the microphone from one of us, and like, as he wanted to do stuff. And like, I've had people do that at shows before, like especially like just, you know, garage or house party type shows where, you know, somebody will just grab the mic and like just start making it about them. But this is an actual venue, so yeah, he got surrounded and asked to leave and everything like that. And so it was just it was very funny. The energy of the room went way up after he left too. Everybody was so happy. Like, that closed out. That ended up being a really good show for us because people were just like, oh, I'm so glad that guy's gone. So just know, if you're the kind that likes to make somebody else's show all about you, they will be cheering you when you get kicked out of the venue.
Yeah.
People will be so happy that you're gone.
Like the person getting walked off the plane. Like,
so
yeah,
if that's the kind of attention, if that's the kind of attention you crave, then sure, go ahead and, you know, like I said, make it all about you.
Yeah. So don't be a dick at shows. Just enjoy the show and let them do what you paid to see them do.
Or don't enjoy the show, but still shut you yet.
I would say, yeah, too, something that I have to learn for myself sometimes is like, if you're, you know, especially if you know the performer and stuff, like, yeah, give them a little something, you know, if you're stifling laughter and stuff, just let it out and like help them out. Like, it's cool to hear.
Why would you stifle your laughter? That's the part that I would think they'd want to hear.
Yeah, that's what they want to hear. But, you know, you get, like, shy about it if you're, like, on the other end of the spectrum where you're like, don't notice me. do not perceive. That's how I am. And so that's like something I've had to kind of learn.
I actually have a lot of fun with it too. Like you, I went to a show before and I was one of the guys in the front ish. So the comic decided he wanted to make a spectacle of me and start making fun of me on the set. And I leaned into it and made fun of him too.
See, if they, like, if they pull you in first, that's one thing. Like if the comic pulls you in first.
Yeah, that's crowd work. That's an
open door to reply. But if they don't address you, yeah, you know, that's the point.
Like I was made making. A comment about how bald I was or whatnot. I was like, take a look into my shot or see how ugly your back ass is. It's like, ouch. I was like, yeah, I know. We could do this all day. I'm bored. Let's go. In the end, though, we ended up shaking hands and laughing and stuff. I was like, I thought it was hilarious. It was good. It's like, I know I'm bald. I'm not worried about that. But like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a question where you start to wonder, like, is it like whether they know they're being mean spirited or just like, yeah, what are the odds that he's really bothered by this comment? Because imagine if I was actually self-conscious about my head, like, should I, where I've been like curled up in a ball, like, oh God, he's making fun of how bald I am.
Well,
I forgot the Rogaine.
Well, that's one of those things that you can't help. So, I mean, it's kind of good behavior on the comic's part not to draw attention to something that's not like a choice on the other person's part. But, I mean, that's real talk.
He drew all the attention to it. Like, look at this bald motherfucker.
Right.
Brooke, how does it feel to be the only person on the episode with a full head of hair?
Feels good. Feels pretty good. No, I mean, like I actually.
Unless there's a nice breeze, then and these three dudes, these three tall dudes with no hair on the top of their head, get to feel good.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know, I've donated to Locks of Love 3 times.
Oh, nice!
I just really wish that one of those had gone to y'all.
I don't mean to dox the locks, but I've hung out with Brooke, and she has fantastic hair.
Thanks. It's a just lot.
In excess.
Yeah, it's.
I wish I knew. I spent too much time being concerned that she was trying to cook me in the oven, so I didn't get that vibe.
And I almost got away with it too.
Meddling kids.
Kids.
I shouldn't complain. Like I really, now that I'm in my late 30s, I'm glad that I still have a lot of hair on my head because ladies suffer from like a lot of my friends have patches and stuff too. Like thinning's just kind of all over the place. But like now I'm kind of like reaping the rewards of being like a really hairy young lady, which was not cool. Like I was like, I'm not going to shave my legs every day. I went through like a phase where I wasn't shaving my legs. And I have some other issues that are a lot to deal with that we won't talk about in mixed company here. But like now it was all worth it. So I earned it.
Hell yeah.
By the way, everyone else's weekend. We talked about mine.
I just wanted to say I need Docs the Locks to be entered into the ledger.
Docs that's what I said. The Locks.
That's what I said about Brooks. That's like, I don't mean to dox the locks when I was talking about her hair. Because you know when you dox somebody, you reveal things about their private life.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm writing that down. That's the title of the episode.
Docs
the Locks.
That's a song right there. Docs the Locks.
Anyways, weekend.
My favorite locks will always be smoked salmon.
Ooh, there you go.
Think about it. I need to eat some food.
Speaking of food, I will talk about, this isn't the weekend, but this is today. I went to a gas station and for a drink, and they there's a new snack. That was it was a bag and it was cereal, so like Kellogg's Fruit Loops and Apple Jacks and stuff in a bag, and it says Jumbo Snacks SNAX, and so I was like, oh, it's a bag of cereal, and but it said like jumbo size, perfect for snacking. I was like, oh, okay, this must be a bag of big cereal. So like, you know, it's cereal but like blown up to like chip size or something like that. I was like, this could be pretty good. And so I bought like a couple of bags, and I opened them up, and the Apple Jacks one is just regular size Apple Jacks, just in a bag.
Wow!
By jumbo size, I guess they meant it was a jumbo portion of them. But then again, it's like cereal already comes in a bag that's in a box, so it's like
I figure in the cereal aisle, those are the jumbo sized ones.
Yeah, yeah, and so it was like. Yeah, I felt very betrayed. I was very confused. But then I opened the Fruit Loops one. I was like, okay, this is actually slightly larger cereal. So this isn't just that they put cereal in a bag and sold it as a snack, but the Apple Jacks ones, it literally was just like, okay, it's just a bag of dry cereal.
Disappointing.
Kind of, but at the same time, I love Apple Jacks, so I was like, well, it's still good. It's still cereal that I like. So what were you saying, Brad? Apple Jacks.
I was saying, on the benefit, Apple Jacks are still freaking delicious. So
they are, yeah. That's still one of the a top tier cereal for me still.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of, you know,
it's still all about the Golden Grahams, and I still
don't
know how they cram all of it.
How do they cram that Graham?
Cram
through the
isn't that the commercial jingle?
What?
I would say, isn't that one of the commercial slogans? Like, how do they cram that?
How do they cram?
Instead of a toast crunch?
Yeah, that is exactly what it is.
Old Graham. Cinnamon Toast Crunch is so good. They have, like, the churro one now. Have y'all had that?
No.
See, I have not, but I'm like...
Now I gotta find it.
Isn't it already churros?
Basically. They kind of like just change up the shape. But don't tell Brunel. Let him
know. Okay.
For himself.
Don't tell me what!
You know that I live in the part of Texas where there's like churros everywhere. Like people will be on the corner of the street trying to sell them to you. So I don't know. It to me seems like it's very thoroughly like a grainy product with cinnamon and sugar all over it. So it's kind of like cinnamon delicious. Toast crunch. Yeah. But now I'm gonna look them up. I'm gonna have to try them.
We got this little cinnamon twists at Taco Bell one time, and they were like the most flavorless things we've ever had.
I did buy those ones, yeah. Those are not churros.
No.
I don't know if
now they have the Cinnabon, like little fried donuts. Those are pretty good.
Yeah. The creamy center.
There's a lot of weird like product placement branded cereals popping off lately.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody remember? Sorry, go ahead.
No, after you. I want to hear what you remember.
Does anybody remember, like, when they had the Cinnabon bites or whatever at Taco Bell, which were like the, you know, it was like a cinnamon roll, but with like the creamed stuff in the middle. And, you know, you'd buy like a pack of those for dessert. But they had one that was based on, it was either Fruity Pebbles or Fruit Loops. I don't remember which one, but it was fruity. And it was so, so good. I could buy like 10 of those and eat them.
Never seen those.
They were briefly. They were briefly at Taco Bell. Let's see, delights.
Taco Bell has a vanilla cream lemonade right now that they're doing.
That doesn't vanilla even make cream sense frozen in my brain.
Frozen lemonade. Yeah,
it's a frozen lemonade.
Yeah,
so good.
That makes sense if it's a frozen lemonade because that makes me think of what's that thing that you buy at the Lemon Chill? Oh, it was Cap'n Crunch is what it was. Hang on, I'm gonna link the Taco Bell wiki in the SML chat and our Discord as well, so that y'all can.
I'm gonna pin it.
Cap'n Crunch Delights is what they were called.
Oh, Crunch and Berries. Okay.
Whoa. Oh
yeah.
My god.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want those. Oops. Those look amazing.
They
strawberries.
Yeah, they launched in 2015, and I think they probably canceled them about 2018 or 17. It was
damn.
A while ago now. But, damn, were they good.
Maybe they'll be seasonal, and they'll come back, like, every 8 years like they do with Mountain Dew Pitch Black. I'll just bring it back every 8 years or so.
I ain't always up on my Taco Bell, though, so it may come and go again, and I'll miss it completely.
Speaking of Mountain Dew, Purnell, you try any of the Freedom Mountain Dews that came out?
I haven't even come across them yet.
No.
I haven't had my car in a couple of days at Italy, so that helps. But yeah, I haven't seen them yet. I'm trying to get my waistline back in order because I'm a freaking behemoth whale man, so maybe it's for the best that I haven't found them. But if I do, I'll probably sip a little. We'll see.
I think they're worth trying. The Freedom Fusion, which is lemonade and peach, is really good.
It just kills me that they're just basically coming up with different ways to mix chemicals to create a semblance of a flavor. And I succumb to them every time.
I just wish they would bring Supernova back. strawberry melon one that was out years ago. I miss that one.
They'll probably bring it back someday, but they'll make a comment where, you know, it's a different flavor now. We're not going to call it Supernova. We're going to call it something else, but it's the exact same formula, and you'll be none the wiser.
Oh, so anyone have anything else they want to chat about, or should we dive into reviews? Because we got a handful of games to talk about tonight.
A jumbo snack size portion of. I'm trying.
The jumbest of snacks.
So is that reviews then?
Sure.
I think so. Sorry, you're like, why aren't you guys more chatty, you assholes? And I'm like, I'm sorry. Shit.
I'm just tired. I've had a long weekend, so.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
That I can relate to.
I woke up today and I was like, shit, it's a Tuesday. I have to do a show tonight. And I'm never like that. I'm usually waking up like, yay, it's Tuesday. I have a show to do. And today I was like, fuck, I need another day.
That's what you get for partying.
Well, anyway, we got reviews. Let's start this off. First game to talk about tonight is Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance, or 5 Vengeance, whatever you want to say. Developed by Atlas, published by Sega, code provided to us by Sega for the purpose of this coverage. It released June 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Become a mighty demigod and battle through a decimated Tokyo in a war between angels and demons. Make new allies along your journey, engage in intense turn-based combat, recruit hundreds of demons, and forge your own path to dictate the fate of all existence. Purnell, tell us about your time with Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance.
Well, I'm not sure how much to really talk about in the general sense of the game, because what I can tell you flat out is that I played the living daylights out of the original release of this game. Never beat it, despite putting like 90 hours into it. That was the hubris of picking hard mode and then being lazy. So sue me. But despite not finishing the game, I had a grand time with it. And I, believe it or not, still play it from time to time. I still go back to it and I still play it. I'll finish it probably in 2027. But I did also put in, because I wanted to buy this version of the game too, because I was hoping they would make some narrative changes to like some narrative beats that happened in the original game that I wasn't too fond of per se. Though they decided to go a completely different route with this game, and that the main draw to buying Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance as opposed to the original Shin Megami Tensei V, aside from some quality of life changes and some like general improvements, is that they added an entirely different storyline. They didn't change the narrative of the original game, which they now have called like the canon of like creation or something like that, with the new storyline being called the canon of vengeance. But they still did a new narrative entirely that still makes it interesting to see where they decide to go with that story. And it gives you what feels like almost a new full-blown reason to play through the game again, because they include things like new bosses, new demons you can fuse. They added something called the Magatsui Rails, which is an element where you can kind of like slide up a railing, like Jet Set Radio grinding to get to different remote areas on the map, even. And it just feels like a nicer, cooler game. Like, as I've played a lot of the original game, I boot this one up, and at the very beginning of the game, they let you choose between whether you want to do the new storyline or the old storyline. And they make it pretty obvious which one you're embarking on. And when you choose the new one, you go through a lot of the same areas, but they change certain encounters, they change like different items you can find. They did something really cool regarding some of the essences that are defined by the Algami essences. That is the... Actually, before I keep going, Joe, do you feel like I should talk about the actual game proper instead of talking about the changes that they made to Vengeance? Or do you think this makes logical sense to talk about the changes?
I would talk about the game a little just for the people who aren't familiar with the original release, because the original release was just on the Switch, right?
That is correct. And now it's on all three. It's on the PlayStation, Xbox, and the Switch, which is actually really nice.
PC.
You have access to playing it. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And I bet the sales are going to reflect that. They better. So the actual premise of the game is you are a youngster who lives in good old Tokyo, walking home from school one day, and you come across what looks like the equivalent of like a crime scene. The road's blocked off, right? That goes back to your dorm room, and all you're hearing is that a very grisly scene has been, you know, displayed for all to see, and the cops are dealing with it. So you decide to take an alternate route home, and through a series of unfortunate events, you find yourself in what can only be described as a desolate desert wasteland that's populated by demons. And just before you are about to be, you know, besieged upon by a multitude of them, an entity named as Algami shows up and offers to fuse with you to become something known as a Nahobino. And of course, because it's a video game and why would you want to die this early on, you accept the offer and become an all-powerful being called a Nahobino. I guess the game tries to define it by saying it's the combination of, like, I can't remember what time it was, like knowledge and power or something like that. But that ends up becoming you. And as a result of becoming this entity, you are now faced with a multitude of decisions that leads into what Joe just described as like determining the fate of existence. And I don't want to talk about what ties into that because I feel like some of the cooler plot twists at the beginning of the game stem from what's going on at this point. So I'm not going to tell you what's going on. Just know there's a lot of demons and you're running around a multitude of large, expansive, explorable areas. While you're running around these areas, you'll come across many demons of which you can either battle with or you can have conversations with the hopes of recruiting them to join your party. And then when you're tired of leveling them up and getting the skills that are available to them, you can fuse them into new, more powerful monsters. It's pretty much the classic Shin Megami Tensei loop that people like me have come to know and love for 40 years at this point. It feels like it's been forever. But now it's with a big 5 at the end and a subtitle. So I feel like that's a good general description of the game. But beyond that, so if you are curious about if you should like Shin Megami Tensei 5 in a general sense as an JRPG, I mean, I easily would give it a bite. I love it's not as good as Shin Megami Tensei 4 for me, but I still love it very much, and I would give it a bite in its own right. So now I'm going to talk about the differences between the two games. If you're curious more about the original game, there are the reviews for that. This game has been out for years now. So
I got to just say I feel really old because the first game, Digital Devil Story Megami Tensei, released September 11th, happy birthday, Brooke, 1987.
Wow.
Yeah. That's actually my exact birthday. I'm 87.
Amazing.
Really?
That's amazing. So fucking cool. Pernell, you knew I was. You knew there was something cool about me.
Yeah,
that's actually amazing. I love that.
Yeah,
that's my exact birthday. Ludacris. Ludacris and I were both blessed. I'm so happy right now.
Eat your heart out, Ludacris. Shin Megami Tensei and Brooke were born on the same day as you. Get over yourself.
She's equally as cool as you. No, roll out.
Yes, she is. I'm looking forward to you throwing out a mean rap song. I'll be in the background doing the thing with it'll be a mega hit, you'll see.
So anyway, what is the story with Vengeance? Why did they re-release it? What is in this re-release? What's the story with it?
So I couldn't tell you why the company did. I'm asking me to take a bet. The company did it because of cha-ching, money on the table. The perceived reason why they released this version of the game is because there were complaints about the original narrative. There was also rumors that the game kind of got rushed to completion because they were trying to meet some deadlines and there were elements that they wanted to still put on that they didn't have time to do. Those two things are likely the reason why this game now exists. And it also doesn't hurt that they probably wanted to make more money by making it available to multiple platforms after hearing a lot of people complain about either A, not having the Switch, or B, saying the Switch is an underpowered mess. Why release this game on there instead of something more powerful? So now this game exists. And there are a number of improvements I feel that the game did to the general vibe. One of the most important ones that I think a lot of people will appreciate, especially those that like to play the portable version if they decide to buy this on the Switch again, is the fact that you can now save anywhere you want on the map. Before, you had to go to a pillar of light of which there are many on the world map. But now you can just do it whatever. Now, with that said, in the old game, you could teleport back to that space, dang there whenever you wanted. But that also means you have to run from there to wherever you're trying to get to. So, yeah, it's ultimately a major time saver to be able to just save the game wherever the heck you please. They also have created some interesting side encounters in the game, such as like the Magasui demons. They are basically monsters that have access to the special, I guess like it's a gauge called the Magasui meter, which allows different demons or you in your party to do a special attack when it's filled. But with these special demons, they have access to it too. And that results in some pretty, you know, tight battles where they pretty much do like party wiping attacks out of nowhere. And you're like, well, I didn't kill him fast enough, and that's the game. At which point you then are supposed to respond by saying, yep, that's a Megaten game. Easy kills. That's it. But they did that. They made it easier to find more essences to level yourself or your monsters up. And they also, I feel like they did, one thing they did that was pretty cool is they made it easier to find Algami essence, which are items that will allow you to learn or inherit new abilities unto yourself that are unique to the main character.
Unique.
You used to find them on the main map, but they were just in basic, normal item crystals. But now they are in what are essentially like shells of Algami, which is both cool from a narrative perspective, but also just it makes them stand out from the other treasures on the map. And they supposedly regenerate over time. So if you burn one in the old game and you didn't use it the way that you would have quote-unquote wanted to, like maybe you didn't learn the right skill from it, or maybe you used it for its essences for its weakness transference instead, you were crap out of luck in that game. But in this one, over time, it'll regenerate. You can get it again, and then boom. You have a little bit more freedom with customizing your main character. I like that a lot. I feel like the Magasui rails are pretty cool. And of course, those are the things that just kind of let you kind of slide around the map, like remote locations on it. And lastly, of course, just new demons. I like that they keep adding new demons to these games. Even if I don't necessarily use them all, I may still just stick with Alice and Moshuvu, because why the hell not? They're my peoples. But having new demons is always a good time. Somebody that might want access to them will see them, and that'll be their draw. That'll be the thing that makes them use them. And it just kind of adds to your ability to like strategize in the games, too. Still hard as balls if you play like me and put it on hard mode and don't know how to grind properly. So keep that in mind. Don't back yourself into a corner if you don't have to. But they do allow you to switch difficulties at any time. Something that I don't know if the other one did or if I just was too stubborn to switch it back. But it's worth noting for people who want to challenge themselves, but then maybe are concerned about if they back themselves into a corner. You can change their difficulty whenever you want. And that's important. So, I mean, it's not like there's any achievements or anything like that. So don't worry about that either. Oh, yeah, I rephrased that. I forgot. I don't know. On PlayStation or Xbox, there might be achievements for beating on specific difficulties. You might want to look that up before you take my word for it.
Look it up now and see if I could find out.
One other thing I forgot to mention about one of the changes they made to the game is now in this game, some of the human NPCs are playable party members. And they'll kind of come and go as the story dictates, and they can level up and learn new skills just as the main character, well, just as a demon could. So it's kind of cool to be able to play with characters that were just kind of like bystanders in the previous game. Now they have a role to play. I would assume they as exclusive to the new storyline. I don't think they would have changed the old storyline to reflect that, but I could be wrong. I haven't played the old storyline on this new game, but I could be wrong there. And also, they change up certain encounters on the map where you thought you'd be fighting this guy or fighting nothing. Now suddenly you're fighting something, and it's a new demon, no less. So look forward to that stuff, too, to kind of shake up the game framework for yourself. I like Shin Megami Tensei, the franchise, and I love Shin Megami Tensei 5. The music is a freaking bop, and they gave me new music. They gave me new remixes in this one. Nice. I've always liked this franchise, and this holds up here with this version, too. I'm genuinely grateful that this review copy came in because I did purchase it from Target. It still hasn't gotten here yet. I'm still waiting for it. So I'm glad I was able to play this one, because if I wasn't playing this one, I'd have been real sad. Looking forward to getting to the next part of my, Shin Megami Tensei adventures or whatever. But I'm not sure if there's anything I should be answering beyond what I've already said, but I will just straight out say that if you've never had a taste of demon conversations and demon skill learning and fusions and all that good stuff, and you are missing out, so you should play this. If you hear me say that and go, oh man, Pokemon already did that. First of all, no. This did it first. And also, they're both good games, so play this any freaking way. I just think it's a fantastic product. If you're choosing between whether you want to get this version of the game or the old one, I'd say just get this one. Unless you're really, really hurting for money and want to get it on the cheap. I would say get the new one. I also forgot. There's nothing they added that I remember. They added the sky view option, which is something where it lets you pick the map and pan it skywards just around your general area. And it makes it easier to find things you might be trying to scout out to find, like item chests or events or quests that you need to fulfill. It's just a solid bet because certain landscapes in this game can get really complicated. So having access to that option will make it easier to locate and find treasures instead of wandering around aimlessly once the map starts getting convoluted. So all in all, I think this game is worth the
time. Speaking of treasures and quests, we got to talk about the deluxe edition that of the game that has a DLC bundle available. It comes with 5 pieces of content. 3 of them make the little Mitama enemies, teardrops. It increases the rate of finding them. Yeah. They're still impossible to beat.
No, they're really easy to beat in these games. As long as you carry spy glasses around or cake. The real kick is just catching up from getting them from behind so you have the time to figure out what their weaknesses are and killing them. But yeah, they make them a lot easier to beat in these games than the previous ones, I will say. So,
the deluxe edition also includes 2 bonus demon subquests. Those are available for $5 each, or you could get the full bundle for $14.99, or it's $10 more for the deluxe edition over the regular game, which is $59.99. What are your thoughts on the game, the deluxe edition, the DLC? What are your thoughts on everything?
Well, I didn't buy the deluxe edition, so I can that was your answer for me right there. though I will say DLC in the previous game, in a very rare case for me, I do generally buy the DLC that gives me unique demons, and I hate myself for it, but I always get it on sale. So I'm still cheap despite loving a franchise. So my take is going to be wait for sale unless you're swimming in coin, in which case knock yourself out. You'll enjoy it when you do.
So you normally don't get the deluxe editions of stuff, because I'm trying to base this off of like, what do you normally do? Does the franchise just not hit the mark for you?
So the deluxe edition that Joe's describing is likely the download only version of the game. So that would pretty much be like a nerp for me. But physical, I used to buy damn near every collector's edition you could find because that's just the way I rolled. But then as I got older and I'm starting to feel like life is slipping, I'm telling myself I don't need to buy these big boxes that I barely do anything with aside from playing the game that I originally went to purchase. So with rare exceptions like Unicorn Overlord, I've kind of stopped buying deluxe and super editions of games. Because Unicorn Overlord, for those who don't know, came with an actual board game, too. So, and that was awesome to me.
Yeah, you can't say no to that. Too cool.
Absolutely.
Could I ask one more question really quick? I know we don't normally have question time. Where would you rank this on, like, what's your favorite, like, Persona or Shin Megami Tensei series soundtrack? And where do you rank this one?
Oh, you're totally welcome to ask me that. Also, it's interesting. I thought you were going to say game, but you went with soundtrack. That's a doozy. I would say, believe it or not, of the Shin Megami Tensei games, I think 4 and 5 have my favorite soundtracks by far. They did a crap ton. As far as the Persona games go, Persona 5, people can go either here or there about what they feel about the narrative, but I think the soundtrack in that game was like peak for them too.
Four was where it's at, man. Persona 4 Golden is just nuts. Okay, sorry.
That's just weird. Like, they all have good music. It's just like, it feels like at some point in time, Atlas was like, wait a minute, people are actually buying these games now. We have a budget. Let's spend it. So, and it's showing in the actual works they put out, too, because I've been playing this game for a long time, and for full stop, in a weird way, I almost want to say I prefer Persona 1's OST. It's like, that's what gets weird. Like, I like them all. Like, But there's just something about the quality of the soundtrack in 5 where I'm like, I got to give it to that. Now, if you were to say, Pernell, which soundtrack do you listen to most frequently, which ties to things like nostalgia and all that crap, it's going to be Persona 1 and 2. But that's the Pernell way right there. I love me for some Persona 1 and 2. All that mall music. and also the black market. But yeah, as far as like the games go, I'm always going to tell you go play Persona 2. Both of them. That's the one that I tell everybody to go play. And Shin Megami Tensei, it more so depends on what you can stomach regarding like random encounters and stuff. Because, oh God, 1 through 3 were like, that's like 1 and 2 were ripe for that. 3 is where they finally let you start kind of dealing with like finding enemies on the map and fighting them. But I feel like 4 and 5 for that franchise I had the most fun with by far. Despite liking all of them, 4 and 5 had the most fun for me. 4 being the best in the franchise, hands down. So if you've never played Shin Megami Tensei 4, you need to go remedy that ASAP. Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. I mean, the franchise came out on your birthday. You have no choice.
It's so true.
What in the... Sorry.
Any other questions? Uh-huh. Like favorite characters, favorite character that gets put in cages, any of that cool stuff.
Maybe next time.
Favorite character to put in a cage.
You mentioned sales. The game has already sold in the first 3 days over 500,000 copies.
Amazing.
Yeah, buddy. That's what I'm talking about.
Very good news to hear. Hopefully a couple of those are on Xbox. I know mine was on Xbox. So.
Yeah, Shin Megami Tensei boys were rising up. We're probably making some dents. Get some sales.
But did we get an official verdict on this one?
If you couldn't tell from all the rambling, it's totally a buy it. It's a great game. And honestly, right. just running around the landscapes can be pretty enjoyable. I like exploring the maps.
Yeah, I'm having fun just running around exploring and finding the treasures. And I'm still early in the game, but I'm really enjoying what I'm playing so far. I just need to find more time to actually put into it. Maybe this week.
Yeah, it's a meaty game, so.
It's like a 100-hour game or something.
Well, I mean, but there being two narratives, there's no doubt it's 100 hours, but I'm not sure how much it would be for a person who's not playing it on hard mode and not failing left and right.
Oh, I'm on safety mode. I'm not even on easy. Yeah. I'm on safety.
Fuck that. You might get it. I'd say 40 hours then easily.
I'm going to steamroll everything. Bosses die in 3 hits. I love it.
Has that actually happened?
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Safety mode is like story mode. Like for the people who just want to get through the game, that's what safety mode is.
But 3 hits is just hysterical. Like, I'm going to sink your ship. And you just walk away. No.
I've been grinding on top of it being safety mode.
Oh, mercy.
So I'm seriously just over leveling myself. It's great.
As long as you're enjoying it, don't come back in later and say, I would have liked this game, but it was too easy.
Joe's been grinding on top of it. I want that added to the ledger.
All right, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is Shinobi the Warlord, developed and published by LGS Productions. Released June 11th on PS4 and PS5 for $14.99. Shinobi the Warlord is set at the end of the tumultuous era known as the Sengoku period in feudal Japan. The story follows the rise and triumph of a man consumed by his hunger for power. Against the backdrop of chaos and conflict, the consequences of his pursuit of dominance unfold. Chris, what is going on in Shinobi the Warlord?
Well, Shinobi the Warlord is the latest game from our friend Gilson B. Pontes. So when I got the offer for this one, I said, might as well pile it on. So how much of the description that you just read to me do you think is just straight up a lie?
Oh, man. I'm going to guess that in theory, none of it is a lie because the story exists in intent. But in practice, I'm going to guess that none of it applies to the game.
Okay, well, in Shinobi the Warlord, you play as a lady ninja with boobs.
Wait, what?
You don't... yeah, the description set talks about a man, and either either a big mistake was made, or it's some progress, right? A guy, you know, male pronouns and boobs. That's, you know, more power to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's
okay.
That is a yeah. So that's the first thing where I was like, okay. So this is basically like a copy and paste of like the last game that I played. This one is may win the award for most similar to the other game I just played and gave a bad review to. This is one of those ones. Okay, so, you know, every Gilson B. Pontes game starts with your character nowadays on a horse, because he figured out how to copy and paste a horse. riding through this like spot and then ending up in a different spot, which is going to serve as the level. It always has a random Japanese name and a random Japanese year. So basically, you know, like I said, you ride on your horse, you get to the field. It's of course in the middle of a hurricane, so like the trees are just blowing like crazy. Like, you know, you turn the wind effect like way up on the trees to make them look cool. But then out of your controller, with no ability to change or control it, there is like birds singing and like just gentle, you know, nature-esque sounds coming out full blast. Like it was actually distorting my little controller speaker, out of the controller, no matter what the volume of the game is, because you can't set the volume of the game. The only option is to resume or quit. So, yeah, like, you turn the TV down, which has, like, half of the effects, and then the controller has the other half of the effects. I don't even know if this game has a soundtrack, because I just, like I said, I can only really hear the controller, no matter what you do. So you run around the playing field and follow quest markers. Like I said, in the last three or so games, he finally gave you, like, one sentence to tell you what you're doing, and it's to capture the enemy base. So what happens is, you in this, like I said, it's a big open Unity field, you know, like I said, with the occasional tree, mostly like some mountains pulled up and stuff, a little bit, you know, recognizable to people who have heard of a video game before. But yeah, you run off into the distance, and I'm talking like hundreds of yards is usually where your first target is. And you can get there on your horse or you can get there on foot. Either way, as soon as you get to the, and like, this is a third person combat game, by the way, I should have maybe led with that. But if you've seen any of these games, you've seen this one. As soon as you get in proximity of an enemy, he draws his sword, your character auto dismounts the horse, and the horse runs away, never to be seen again. And then you engage, I'll get back to that actually, because I tested this. You engage in combat with the person with their sword drawn by drawing your own sword and pushing either the Y button to kill him in one hit quickly or the triangle button to kill him in one hit slowly. You know, if you can get there quickly enough and push the quick button, then the enemy will die, and then you get to run for the rest of the game on foot to all the other markers that appear and try to kill all the other guys. Occasionally, a giant footstep sound effect will shake the screen and blare out of the controller. Occasionally when you enter a new map, there will be like 300 foot tall guys just walking around for a few steps and then they disappear. Sometimes there's even like dragons flying around, but you don't engage with them. That's basically all there is to it. Once you get hit, which is an inevitability, it will then start you in a different area where you will then have to find a portal to get to another level unrelated to the level you were just in. That's the entire game. So this time around, I was like, okay, this is really weird that as soon as my character dismounts the horse disappears and I never see it again. I was like, I'm just going to follow the horse as soon as I dismount. So I went up on my like third playthrough, went up to the guy. My character dismounted the horse. The horse took off running in the opposite direction. I followed that horse. It goes about 100 yards and then stands still, and I can just walk right through it. It just becomes like a, it just becomes like this ghost asset. And as soon as I turn my back again, it then vanishes. So that's what's happening with this horse every single time. You literally only have the horse so that it can appear in the screenshot. Now, having said, you know, like I said, it's basically where you just jump off and count down until you get killed by somebody's, you know, cheap, you know, one hit kill or whatever, because the game's weird about hitboxes. You know, as soon as you're near the enemy, there's no sneak function or anything like that. There's only walk and run, and then two speeds of swinging a sword. So it's not like a Dark Souls situation where you could, like, roll around and dodge a hit or anything. It's just really that you have to get up to the hitbox and hit them before they hit you. The hitbox is not necessarily the enemy. It's the area around the enemy. So you kind of have to know when you've hit the limit of how close you can get to that enemy, and then you push the button, and then you win. I know this because in one of my playthroughs, I actually made more progress than I've ever made in a Gilson B. Pontes game. I killed like 10 freaking ninjas. Ooh. And you know what? You want to know what happens when you do that?
Does the game explode?
I wish. You get killed by the 11th ninja. Like, there's no end to the ninjas. I call them ninjas. Your character's a ninja. They're more like samurai guys. But everybody's fighting with ninja swords and... and nobody's sneaking, so it's like, what is anything? Like I said, the gameplay loop is a little weird. Like, after you kill your first guy, you have to walk into a house and access a sword, and it plays a sound. It doesn't give you any text or anything. It doesn't say you've captured the enemy base, or, you know, because that's the goal. It just puts more markers on your map so that you can go find more ninjas and fight them in order. Often these ninjas are spawned hundreds of yards apart. Despite not using every, I talked about this in the last review, but, despite having so many buttons completely unused in this game, the way that you run in this game is to hold, punch in the L3 button. That is to say, you have to tap this, like, push in the stick that you use to move in, which is one of the most annoying ways to do anything. I will say, Gilson got the note from the last review, you don't have to hold the button persistently to run. You had to do that with the horse in the last game. Now you can actually toggle it on and off. So in that way, this is technically the best game he's put out. Because one thing improved over the last. So, yeah, what can I say?
Progress is progress, man. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I guess we got to take what we can at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that ups the playability by, like, you know, 50%. And what's 50% of one? Not
25.
Yeah, it's almost two. So 98 more to go. He'll have a game on his hands here.
Well, it's $15. What do you think?
Yeah, so I've honestly, every single time I play one of these games, it's an opportunity to think about it, to think about this person's place in video games, and, like, think about what would happen here that I could recommend this. Like, you know, is there any redeeming, like, factor of these games, or are they just, you know, is it just a grift from an anonymous person who, you know, just keeps sending us these games and stuff? It's like, you know, who's out there? Are they really just out there collecting the $15 or getting their, you know? This game is rated 4 stars out of 5 on the PlayStation Store from 10 ratings. So I'm like, you know, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Like, I still don't know what's going on with this. And, you know, I would totally love to give this, like, you know, I give them all a fair shot. I play them as long as I play any other game that I can play that I review. It's not like I just collect the Gilson B. Pontes game and make up something. Yeah. Like, I really do experience it based on its own merits. And yeah, every single time, it's just like, don't bother. Not even as a joke. They don't even have stupid ninja sounds when you kill things like Shadow of the Ronin, the Revenge to the Samurai, which I believe Joe has on the soundboard.
No, not anymore. The soundboard has evolved in,
there's my
in
impression
very
of
scary
it.
Ways.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, the games are inching towards playability, but, like, the huge factors are still being ignored. Knowing what to do, having any kind of, like, growth on the character's part, or difficulty scaling, or I don't know, something. You know, text, story, music, not using the controller for persistent sound effects. Like, there's so many more things that need to happen in these games before I can even give this approach try it territory for this stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, continue to not bother. This is, you know, Gilson B. Pontes, just again. Again, this is super close. Like, I had to look twice because the backgrounds and stuff, I think he just copied and pasted from the last game, man. I even think, I don't remember if the female ninja was in the, I'm sorry, the male ninja with boobs was in the, was in the last game, but I mean, I know I've seen this ninja before too, so, no. You know, whatever. Yeah, save your money. Just don't do it.
All right. Well, moving on. Next game is Just Axe, developed by Super Galactic Game Dev, published by Targum Games, released May 27th on Steam for $10.99. Pioneers Against Aliens. Just Axe is an exciting 2D platformer with puzzles, interactive environments, and an unusual setting. Solve riddles, combine your moves, and set out to save your hometown and possibly all of humanity. And don't forget to take your axe with you. For now, unusual. What's going on in Just Axe?
So, in Just Axe, you play as a character named Martha, who sets out on a journey after being informed by Butterfly of the ability to perform a series of tests in the hopes of stopping what can only be perceived as an alien invasion on her world. All she has at her disposal is an axe that was hanging on the wall of her cabin. Hence, Just Axe. That's all she's got. It's an axe.
See now.
And let me see. It could also be conceived as Justice, Just Axe. That's why I was also calling it administering sheer, sharp Just Axe. But anyway, this game takes place over the course of approximately 9 stages. And I'm going to get this out of the way now because I feel like if I start talking, I'm going to forget to say it at the back end of the game. The levels, many of the levels in this game are way too long. Not in an unplayable way, and I'll talk about that later, but oh my god, some of these levels, you're like, this should be split into 2 or 3 levels easily. But I digress. I just want to get that out of the way before I forgot to say it later. In each level, you are tasked with getting from the beginning of the stage to the end of the stage, fighting monsters along the way. You start out with the only abilities you start with are the ability to walk, jump, and swing your axe at enemies that approach you, and lastly, the ability to do a sort of a wall jump by jumping at a wall, then pressing the attack button, swing your axe at it, and then launching off of that wall. Only special walls allow you to do it, though. You can't just do it at any wall. But as you play the game, you'll get a few more abilities, too. Not a plethora of them, but a few more.
Plethora.
To grow your moveset. It's going to be every word there.
Plethora was our special word before unique.
Unique.
That was a Cole thing. She loved plethora.
It's such a good plethora. Word. It was the final boss of Kick-A-Million. That's where I learned it, believe it or not. Kick-A-Million. He's a man of many heads and many eyeballs. And he kept saying die all the time. But yeah, you'll be running around fighting enemies and dodging traps and the like to, you know, until you get to the end of the stage. As you're running through the level, there are collectibles. Though it's funny because at the beginning of the game, they make an indication like, oh yeah, if you collect these valuables and give them to the butterfly, you'll get rewards for them. But you really don't. Unless they try to define it by being the thing with the costumes and such. But if you collect, you can collect shiny objects, which each level has a total. And then you can also collect stars that are hidden on the maps as well. If you collect all the baubles on a stage, you'll get an achievement for it. And I believe you also unlock costumes, either a new axe or a new wardrobe for the main character. Once you get to the end of the stage, the levels, sometimes there's a boss, sometimes there isn't. You're free to go back to levels at will, but otherwise you'll just progress and keep going. The game has some general issues. Mostly the music is extremely repetitive. And also, if the developer is listening, if there's a way you can do something via patch to make the main character's animations when pulling themselves up onto a ledge faster, everyone and their mom would appreciate it. Because that animation just felt like it dragged a bit longer than it should have every time we needed to do it. And you need to do it a lot in this game. But I digress with that. Also, the enemy variety could use some work. I wish there were more enemy types in the game. There are a number of them. And some of them can be a little bit more annoying than others, like the little dog, purple dog monster, where you'll hit it do damage to it, and then you have to hit it again so that it doesn't do damage. Then it'll attack you, and then you can hit it again. Like, it's weird that that's the way that monster works, and other monsters don't work like that. It's just the purple dog monster. But other than that, I can't say I had too much trouble with the other enemies in the game. The little monsters with the clubs are annoying as hell, and so I got the one ability that let me kind of do a little more evasive maneuvers around them. But you might think I didn't like the game. I'd be ragging on it like I am right now, but I'll be blunt with you. I beat the entire game and got all but one achievement, which I spent way too many hours trying to do before my dad came by and said, let's mow the lawn. I was missing one collectible in the entire game, and I have no idea where it is. And I started doing levels over and over again, trying to find where this one item is, because whereas I normally don't care about achievements, the fact that I was one achievement away from having the entire game completed and I'm one item away from having done that.
When you're that close, you gotta go for it, man. Like, oh,
it's that has to hurt. Yeah, I wish it does hurt. I wish he wouldn't try to find a walkthrough to see if the guy doing the walkthrough on their online found the treasure. He didn't find half the treasures I did. I said, like, this is stupid. The one guy who put the game up on YouTube, he's not helping me. That's your one job, is to help me by putting your video up, and you failed. But yeah, I played this game to death. No ifs, ands, or buts about it, which has to tell you I had fun with it. I mean, I've put down games for way less, and I played this entire game. I think what helps it is that at its core, it's not particularly complicated. There's some tough jumps involved in the game, but it also gives you so many extra lives. You have to be a complete inept gamer to run out of lives in this game. They give you tons. So if you decide you want to jump off a cliff, believe it or not, if you come back and tell me you ran out of lives in this game, I'll never let you live it down. That's how many lives they give you. I stopped playing today at 148 lives.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You get a lot of lives in this game. So if you find yourself thinking, I should jump off this cliff, maybe there's a secret item there. Go for it. What's the worst that happens? You lose life. Oh, well. Which, I mean, honestly, I did a couple of times. Like, let me just jump and see if there's an item down here. Whoop, I died. Whatever. Keep going. But the game is honestly very... I had fun playing it. I clearly had fun playing it. There's no other way to describe it. But you might be telling yourself, why wouldn't you give it a buy itself a try, which I'm going to give it. Spoiler, I'm giving it a try. And the answer is because I also feel like I'm a lot more forgiving about certain stuff than some people are. And I can easily picture someone being like, the first level is 30 minutes long. That's not fun. Or, oh, man, these controls feel a little stiff. Not fun. Worst game I've ever played, which I hate when people say that because they don't know what the worst game they've ever played is or what the worst game ever made even is. They've never had the misfortune of coming across it. But again, I digress. This game is honestly a joy. I had fun playing it. I enjoyed my time with it. I did levels multiple times. I did kind of find it funny that, like, the second to last level of the game, they decided to finally change up the formula and give you, like, a bunch of fetch quests on the map. I don't know what that was about, but I navigated it well enough. Ultimately, I feel as though this is a game worthy of trying if you want to get yourself a quick hit of puzzle. No, I don't want to say puzzle because there's not a ton of puzzles, but platforming action, and you want to help out what I perceive to be a kind of like a young developer. And I hope that this game is a stepping stone from the produce new and better games, because this is a good start. I liked it.
Cool. So $10.99 official verdict.
I'd give it a genuine high-end try.
Cool. All right, moving on. Next game, Draconic Resurgence, developed by Maria, published by Phoenix Reborn Games. Released June 11th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $4.99 each platform. In the distant past, world was completely dominated by dragons, relentless creatures of unimaginable power that seemed to live for eternity. As the years passed, humanity challenged the dragons in a merciless war to overthrow their rule. Eventually, humanity emerged victorious from this conflict. At least that's what everyone believed. We had our friend Andy Sperry check this one out. He was unable to join us tonight, but he wrote in a review. And Brooke, you have that little review, don't you?
That's right. I've got it right here.
Not a big one, unfortunately, but it's not a huge game, so... What does Andy have to say about this one?
Well, it's short and sweet. I'll just take it from the top. It's a Draconic resurgence, draconic resurgence, which is how I thought it was pronounced until I just heard Joe just say that, places players in the role of a noble knight on a quest to find the draconic dungeon and gain the upper hand in the epic battle between humans and dragons.
Dun, dun,
along
dun.
Your journey, I know, enemies will do their utmost to thwart your plans, but humanity's fate rests in your hands. Unsheath your sword and prepare to face the evils lurking deep within the dungeon. Draconic Resurgence adheres to the classic retro lock and key platformer format. Players explore a variety of areas within a castle, overcoming obstacles and battling enemies. Along the way, you acquire new abilities, such as the double jump and dash, which are essential for accessing new areas. But there's more. Additionally, you obtain new weapons, including bombs and a bow, which also aid in uncovering new parts of the game. If you haven't figured it out by now, I didn't read this in advance, and I'm challenging myself to read this in real time. Boss encounters add another challenge to your journey, pitting you, Purnell, against formidable foes, such as the Black Knight, the Baby Dragon, the Giant Crab Creature, and the White Knight. These are probably real enemies. The clever platforming introduces a difficult element. While the game's small scale ensures it's easy to remember your next destination, especially since there is no map available.
Yeah, that was one of my complaints with the game. Despite how small it is, the lack of a map is irritating because I would find myself just going in circles and I don't know what the hell to do at this point. I just gave up.
Yeah, we all remember when we tested Isle of Jura and I was like, this is probably like a 6-hour game. And you guys are like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, I keep getting lost. You guys are like, there's three buildings. That happened. So I can imagine that would be a,
nice call,
that was like a year and a half ago. All right. But finally, Draconic Resurgence's straightforward format offers a fun experience for newcomers to the genre and provides some quick points for achievement hunters. In my opinion, me, Andy, while Draconic Resurgence is an enjoyable game that satisfies a quick retro itch, it may not justify its $5 price point. And we now have to guess the rating. So what do you guys think that rating is? It said it may not justify its $5 price point. So I'm thinking like maybe try it. But this is also a little bit of F it, why not territory, if I may.
Yeah, my thoughts on the game are it's clearly a fuck it, why not kind of game. It's $5. It's quick, easy to play through, retro fix, you know, as long as you don't get lost like me and give up. It's cute. It's fun. It's not overwhelming. I do wish it wasn't two separate purchases between Xbox One and Series X and S. But, you know, people love their achievement stacks. So $5, I'd say fuck it. Why not?
That's cool. I have a question for y'all since this was a short review. How do y'all feel when a game doesn't include a map? Do you think that was a conscientious choice on the developer's end to try to make this a more engaging game for the price point? Or do you think stuff like this is an oversight?
I feel like, honestly, I could easily see a developer intentionally omitting a map because over the years, what a lot of games have become is just follow the dot or follow the cursor. It's not even about using the map as a map should be used. It's about following the... basically following the guide, so you're not even engaging the world they created. You're literally just taking cues from MapQuest.
No.
Or, I'm sorry, Google Maps. I like getting lost in games, quite frankly. Like, I'm the guy who will be in a car with somebody. Like, last week we went to New York, and my brother had a GPS on in the car. And I'm like, okay, we're not in the city proper right now. We've got a decent tank of gas. You're telling me you can't just enjoy the environment and just find your way? It's like, no, I need directions. I'm like, this is insane. And then the thing that killed me is like, we left the city entirely. We were on our way home. I was like, The route is the turnpike. There are no directions. You know where you're going. Why do you have the map? Because I need it, all right? I'm like, this is bullshit. This is what happens. People get so dependent on guides telling them where to go that they don't know where they're at anymore when they should. So for me in games, I am perfectly okay with a game either A, not having a map at all, or B, making it so that the map isn't always present. You have to either find the map to engage it, or you have to bring it up from time to time, which means you have to kind of not have it displayed sometimes.
I like maps.
So. They're comfy and easy to wear.
Ashley is pretty dependent on maps as well. Like, anytime we go anywhere, Ashley needs to have the GPS up and running the whole time. I'm like, give me a Cliff Notes version of the directions, like 81 to 83 to 15 to 29, and then we'll look in town and see where we got to go. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, that's how it should be. That's how it should be. It's like, get a list of things you need to do, but find it yourself. I mean, with that said, I will say there's something to be said about having access to a nav in an environment where you are genuinely undeniably lost, because we've all been lost before and having to like pull up into a gas station like, hi, can you tell me to get back to the highway? I'm really careful where I'm at. Having a navigator now for that kind of thing is a blessing, because stopping in some racist town being like, will they shoot me when I walk up to the cash register? Let's not find out. I have a nav for that shit now. It's a blessing, but don't overdo it.
Yeah.
Don't.
It's like, be grateful we got them now, but remember, back in my day, you had to just remember where shit was. You had to remember where something was.
My day, you had to know how to fold the map.
And when to hold the map.
God, no wind, hold
map. If anyone has ever had, like, a full state fold-out map, and you tried to put that fucker back together, you know how hard that can be. But we got to move on.
Buying atlases. Better.
Next game is the Ouroboros King, developed by Oriole Cosp Games and Dolores Entertainment, published by Dolores Entertainment, released June 20th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. The Ouroboros King combines the strategic depth of chess with the build variety and replayability of roguelikes. Assemble a formidable army, discover powerful relics, and buy surprising gadgets to defeat the coven. Chris, what's going on in the Ouroboros King?
All right, well, this is a really interesting game. I don't know if y'all ever heard of the game Chess, if you heard
once
of this thing.
Once or twice.
Yeah, it's a pretty old game. I think it's from the 70s. you move some pieces around on a board, and each piece can move in a different way, and your whole thing is like try and get the other guy's king, because that's the piece that wins you the game. If you're real good at this, then you can play it against multiple people all at the same time, and look real cool doing it and stuff, as TV shows and movies have shown us. For the most part, though, you'll just be like, you know, in the chess club reading books about, I don't know, the Ruy Lopez opener and stuff like that. Like, chess gets really obnoxious really quickly. I learned how to play it at an early age, and I want to say I got good, but then I ran into like an actual nerd and found out, oh, there's like this whole iceberg of like crap you have to know, otherwise you lose in like three turns. So it's kind of like the Dark Souls of 3,000 year old board games. And so yeah, definitely the chess people got the note that they need some improvement, something to freshen it up so that the nerds can't like win every time, because we're tired of the nerds winning all the time. So they came up with Ouroboros King, which is so it's like chess. You got a checkerboard of you know, stuff. You basically move from location to location, fighting increasingly larger boards of other, you know, fighters and stuff. You start off very humbly. You get three pieces, and the opponent gets two pieces. And these pieces, instead of being the, like, I don't know, what is it, like six different chess pieces that you have to learn, this one has 56 pieces that are randomly available to select, like a deck builder. there are also terrain spots on the board sometimes, like rocks that you can't move past, or bombs where if you move a character into it, it blows up like a part of the board and takes out other characters. So you could use that as a strategy. Or portals, like from the game Chess. Sorry, from the game Portal. How did I mix those up?
That was amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, there's actual portal action in this game, because I guess there has to be. There's also relics and items you can pick up along the way. We don't have time to talk about those. They augment the game in different ways. Some of them pretty extreme, some of them pretty just generally useful. Like an alarm bell, it tells you when your king's in danger. But then there's like a rewind item that you can use, and there's like, you know, there's a like a chain combo for assassin type characters, because there's a couple of assassin type characters now on the board. Pretty cool stuff. You could get really lost in reading this, which is great, because they have an archive section in this game where you can look over every single piece and try and imagine how it's going to work on the board. Or you can practice. There's a practice option that lets you put any piece on the board in any order and kind of move them around and figure out how they work. My first big problem with this game is that you don't have both things at the same time. So you can read about what the characters do, you can put them on a board and shuffle them around, but you can't read about what they do once you're in practice mode. So you're just kind of there with a bunch of little pictures, and you're like, I don't know what this does. And then you're just kind of like going all day, like trying to figure out what. But it turns out the best teacher is defeat. So, of course, you want to just start the game immediately and just kind of learn it as you go along. Once you do that, you find out that this game is rad as hell. Like I said, you start off with, you have your king character, which, of course, can move one space in any direction. It is the linchpin of the whole operation. If it goes down, you lose. And then, of course, the opponent will always have a king character, too. Now, the king can be upgraded, which is crazy. There are pieces in this game that can be upgraded to other pieces. The way you would do this is that when you're selecting the level that you want to access, sometimes it's an enemy. Sometimes, well, most of the time, there's some kind of reward involved in which level you pick to go to. Sometimes it's an armory, which lets you upgrade your piece to a different piece that has more powers. Sometimes it's a shop where you can buy items, or sometimes it's a board where you can select a relic to take with you for the rest of your adventure. So lots of choices to make there. And then, of course, there's a boss at the end. And then once you defeat the boss, you move on to a different board and repeat until you got like a whole set of, you know, characters. So far, it looks like the maximum is actually 8, which is weird, because like there's way more than that on a standard game of chess. But then again, this game's relation to chess is just that the function of the pieces, you know, they can move into certain places, and when you move into another enemy space, you take over their space and you try to take out the king. That's where the resemblance, you know, starts and stops, besides the fact that all the chess pieces are represented here in one way or another. But yeah, like I said, you choose your random pieces and go to town, and it's really great to kind of, you know, see what the fates have in store for you, and it's really great to kind of get a piece that you're not familiar with and kind of learn how it works. And like, they get really creative with these things. And I have found that as somebody who learned chess at an early age and can actually play a game, you know, when I reviewed Chess Ultra a while ago, I actually did win some games against the computer, which is, you know, unusual. You know, I found that this game is very accessible and easy to learn, as long as you don't try to learn it all at once, because the game's not great at that. Like I said, you can get the description or the practice. But the cool thing is, once you're actually playing, if you hover over your piece, it will tell you what the piece does, and it will show you, it'll highlight the pieces you can move to. And so again, this game actually does a really effective job of teaching you while you're playing. So for that reason, I do like it a lot for that. Let's see if there anything else to it. But yeah, I actually found this to be pretty cool. Oh yeah, I just wanted to say one good thing and one bad thing. The good thing is that unlike most chess games, you can lower this game's difficulty so far. You can make it 4% difficult. out of 100, if you so desire. So that's a 1/25th amount of difficulty versus as much as it can go. So yeah, I put it at 25% at first, and yeah, I was pretty much rocking it. So to be able to make it even like, you know, a fraction of that, this is a very accessible game for new players, and you don't have to know chess. You just, you know, if you know checkers, you know how to play this game. So don't worry about that. However, I will say that the one thing I find frustrating is that this clearly started as like some kind of mobile game or something. So it is touchscreen compatible, but moving the cursor around is so frustrating. It just, it highlights stuff in yellow, and you're constantly, like, when I'm trying to move my cursor around, there's a little bit of a delay, there's some input lag, so, like, I'm trying to choose my piece, and it's just like, where's my highlight thing? Where am I? I'm looking at the map, I'm trying to access the menu, because everything has the cursor on it, so it's like, why, I don't need to look at my gold, I want to, like, put a piece on the board, please. Yeah, the interface is a little clunky, is what I'm going to say. So you do kind of have to pay attention to what you're doing or use the touchscreen. But I did not find it a smooth ride in that sense. At first, that wasn't a complaint, but as I started to get into more and more complicated situations, it started to become a complaint. So that's just something to know going in. I would like for this game, since it's just text and simple graphics, to maybe have a little bit of a zippier interface. That would be cool. But again, it's just, these are small complaints. I don't really have any large complaints, so that's a good thing.
Oh, well, the game clocks in at $9.99. What are your thoughts?
I think this game is fascinating. I love when people mess with chess. I think that it is worth it. If you are a board game fan, you know, or a chess fan or something like that, and you really want to see the game turned on its ear, the roguelike stuff is not so intense. I know roguelike always implies super high difficulty. It just means that you're starting in a start position every time and then going up and collecting stuff as you go along. It's no big deal. In fact, I just kind of abandon runs halfway through if I'm like, this isn't shaping up the way I like it. And I've beaten several of the bosses so far. So, like, I played this quite a lot. And, you know, it absolutely gets progressively more difficult in a scale that that I think is pleasing, because, you know, you'll start a match and be like, oh, how am I going to do this one? And then, you know, then you win it and then you feel real good. Or if you lose it, then no big deal. Just go again. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and call this a buy it. Like I said, I would love to be more enthusiastic about that with the little issues I mentioned being a thing. But hey, look, it's not a try it. I think this one actually is a winner.
Cool. Well, if you pick it up on the Switch at least before the 11th of July, you could pick it up for $7.99 instead of $9.99.
Hey,
so, save $2.
Save $2.
Put those $2 towards the final game to talk about tonight, which is Rider Spirits, developed by Shinyadin, published by Radlake Games, released June 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $5.99. Play against the computer or locally and compete in a wide variety of racing tracks and game modes. Choose from an array of wacky racers, each with their own unique abilities, and show off your riding skills. And if things get ugly, use all kinds of crazy items in order to get the advantage and be the first one to cross the finish line. Can you all your opponents? Purnell, did you?
No. This game is surprisingly tough. yes, it's tough. Rider Spirits is a game that I didn't even know existed until now. But apparently this game was actually out back in the 90s as a competitor to Mario Kart. And it does make sense when you see it in action, but I assumed it was originally a game that was designed to be in the spirit of Mario Kart being released today. So that was a nice pleasant surprise for me. But what you get here is a racing game where instead of riding on go-karts, you're driving on motorcycles. But you are still doing that beloved Mode 7 racing that we came to know and love on the Super Nintendo in its heyday. At the beginning of the game, you choose one of 8 bikers, and those bikers have stats that go from between 5 different categories and different ratings for each one. So think like Mario Kart with light, medium, heavy characters, and you're on the right track. So once you pick your racer, you're free to go. And when you start the game up, you'll already notice something that's surprisingly different from the norm, which is that even though it has that split going top to bottom, it has it even if you're in a single player run. And what that is that the bottom screen ends up being the actual screen that you're looking at to control your character, while the upper screen is meant to be through your mask, like through your helmet, in the rear view file. So it's almost like saying you turned around and looked behind you, but it's available all times. So at this point, the race is on. And you will notice immediately that you suck at driving fast compared to the other characters, because this game is designed to always put you in the back and you have to kind of scrimp to make your way up to as close to first place as you can. And you're not getting first place unless you run the course damn near perfectly. Yes, even on rookie mode, which is the first cup, you will be behind. This game is no joke. When you're driving the course, you can just accelerate. There's a wheelie button, though. I never really noticed much of a reason to do wheelies. That's probably what separates me from the boy, from the men. Uh-huh. And you can also turn left and right, but unlike Mario Kart, you can lean into the turns, too, to make it easier to make sharp cuts. And this game kind of requires you to do that, because if you don't, you're going to either A, run out of speed, or just straight up crash your bike, because that's how this game rolls. Power-ups are handled very differently in this game compared to Mario Kart, because instead of having items on the ground that you pick up, you instead have to drive into the pit stop lane per lap. And once you've gone to the pit stop, you'll get an item randomly distributed to you, which you can then use and see what happens. Because you're not going to know what they do until you figure them out, because there's nothing in the game that straight up tells you what items do. So you'll be kind of figuring that out on your own. Now, fortunately, the game does come with a digital printout of the manual that originally came with the game. However, it's all in Japanese, so get your Google Translate on your cell phone ready to go. But once you pull that off, you're pretty much straight. In fact, I'd actually recommend from the jump, before you even play the game, take out your cell phone and go to Google Translate and, one, learn what the different stats are between each of the bikers so you know who's good for what, and then also knowing what the items do. That'll make your experience a lot more enjoyable going into this game. I am not going to sit here and say that I compare this to Mario Kart, because the winner is pretty freaking obvious. It's Mario Kart. Even with nostalgic lenses off, Mario Kart's just the better game. However, this game does bring its own levels of enjoyment that make it fun to play. And that is extended further into a mode that's unique to this game that Mario Kart doesn't have, called Endurance Mode, which kind of works similar to one of those NASCAR races where you have to do a ridiculous number of laps and gasoline suddenly becomes a concern for you, the driver. You pick a pair, one of two pairs of riders, and you choose the number of minutes you want the race to take place for. And at this point, you have X number of minutes to get into first place and keep yourself there when the clock runs out. Now, as you're riding around the course, you're going to notice that your gas gauge is dwindling as you progress the game. You have a limited supply of fuel. So when you are at a moment where you feel like it's safe to pull in, you're tasked with pulling into the pit stop and switching to your other biker while your previous biker refuels their bike. I think that's kind of a cool feature, and I think it'd be fun if they had a multiplayer version, like a four-player mode where two players were on one team and they switched off. I think that'd be a lot of fun. And
that'd be cool.
I think it's honestly untapped potential, because I can't think of a game that did that. But that would be awesome. And this is a game that kind of laid the benchmark for it in 1994 or whatever. So there you go. Also, one thing I meant to mention, I mentioned the items at the pit stop, but you might notice in this game, you're not going to find a nitro boost in that pit stop. And that's because the game, by default, gives you 3 boosts per race. Now, you can use them whenever you want, and when you use it, you'll get an extreme boost in speed. However, unlike the contemporary competition, at least in my experience, if you think you're going to take a boost and just kind of dash over the dirt to make a big jump ahead of your opponents, you might find yourself unpleasantly surprised, because even with a acceleration boost kicking in, once you hit the dirt, your bike slows to a freaking crawl. It is very hard to come up with like shortcuts that go off the beaten track in this game. Not to say they're impossible, but good freaking luck. So maybe that's where the wheelie comes in. One wheel for traction. So, but all in all, I feel like Rider Spirits, while it does not eclipse Mario Kart, I do feel as though it makes for a nice side dish. I feel like if this game had come out back in the 90s and I could have afforded it, keyword is afforded it, I would have seen myself wanting to play this too. It would be like another way to get my racing fix with items unique to this game.
Neek.
All in all, I'm glad it's here. I'm glad the game exists. I never heard of it until now. And I'm glad Rideolica decided to bring it out here, like kind of how I feel about a lot of the games they release in the States. So this one will be no different. I give this game a, well, you do your thing.
$6, your decision.
I'm going to give it a fuck it, why not? Get yourself some gaming history on the books. See what competition for Mario Kart exists that we never saw here in the States. And just kind of have fun with it. It's only $6, and in exchange, you'll get a taste of what we missed out on.
Also, if you can, play Konami Crazy Racers on the Game Boy Advance. That game ruled.
Yes, it did. I actually regret I sold it. I can't remember why I sold it back then, but I, you know, that period where GameStop let you, or let you return a game after 10 days, despite having played it or not.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what I did with my copy of that game, and I do regret it, because I liked it a lot.
Do you know how to change a battery on a Game Boy Advance cart?
Is this a joke or an actual thing that you're asking?
It's an actual question I'm asking you.
Oh, yes. There are special screwdrivers you can buy. I actually have some here. And then, if I remember correctly, it's a literal watch battery.
I have, like, two copies of the game, but one of them has a dead battery. If you want that one, I'll just ship it to you.
Are you serious? That's really nice of you.
Yeah, I got two copies, so, I mean, I have one that works already, and I just been lazy about getting rid of the other one. I'll have to find it first, but we'll talk.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Anyway. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. We made it through. Thanks to everyone for hanging out and being here and keeping me company. Thanks to Andy for writing in his review. And Brooke, thank you for reading it. Saved me a few minutes.
My pleasure.
Music this episode, since we finished up with a Mario Kart-ish game, we'll play something from the 1UP's Super Mario Kart album. So,
did you do Donut Planes?
Do you want Donut Planes? We'll do Donut Planes.
Do Donut Planes.
Better than plain donuts.
Hey, we've come full circle.
Take that back.
I know.
We've come full circle.
Glazed is the best.
Yeah. I like a chocolate glaze, depending.
I like.
Pizza Hut has chocolate donut bites that I want to try. They look really good.
I'm trying to decide what I want to eat. And like, first of all, I want a Taco Bell. Now I want this.
So. Indian food. Always Indian food.
I just had Indian food. And you're right. I want it again. It's so delicious. What's your favorite Indian? I had some Saag Paneer recently. It was so good.
Yeah, I do Saag Paneer. I do chicken vindaloo. I need to start messing with the curries again. But I get my hits and I stick with them because they're always freaking great. And I was like, how hot do you want them? I'm like, I want to see through time.
Oh, wow. I get it mild, baby.
We get the spectrum. We got it.
Yeah.
Oh, the flavors of the rainbow.
Well, this ending's going off the railing. Does anyone have final words to end the show?
Get yourself some Indian food. Expand your palate, damn it.
If you haven't eaten yet, go eat something. Take care of yourself. And we'll see you next time.